The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
It's green. That's what we have last time, the electron flux, which gives us a current density, is proportional to the phi is the electrochemical potential, and so electrochemical potential gradient, L11 is a coefficient, L12 is another coefficient. So for electron Q equals negative E, E is the unit of positive electron, right? And so we could write this, if I put a prime here, I can write this as L11 minus d phi dx plus L12 dt dx. Okay. And phi is the electrochemical potential. So it's made of two parts. One part is the electrostatic potential, and the other is the chemical potential. That combined together give us the, so this is, I had the mu divided by Q, and the Q is minus E, so it's minus mu divided by E. So it's a combination. What's really driven the electron flow is a combination of electrostatic potential and the electrochemical potential. Electrostatic potential gives you a force directly acted on the charge, and the chemical potential gives you the gradient of the carrier density. So it's a diffusion. One is really the Lambert density gives diffusion to drive the charge. The other is the force that's driving the charge. And at the end of last lecture, I was a little bit hurry, but I also gave the energy carried by the charge. So to do the energy carried by charge, the thermal energy, this is a heat. Okay? So heat is the energy per charge minus the chemical potential. So this is really, it's not including the net chemical potential flux. Okay, so if I want to do the total energy carried by the charge, I don't do minus mu. I want to do heat and minus mu. Okay, and we sum this up, and of course we have two spin, and kx, ky, kz. And from here, again, we do the coordinate, convert the summation into integration. Since Professor Dresselhaus gave you a guest lecture discussing nanostructure, you will see the difference of nanostructure to bulk in her lecture. She did not go through the details. But you can think about the difference between what I was doing for bulk material and what the lecture she gave on thermoelectricity in quantum structure is really in this summation. She was doing, due to quantization, the density of states change, right? And due to quantization, if you have a thin film or if you have a wire, right? And in that case, if this is, let's say, this is the x direction, this is the y direction, in the case of thin film, the ky direction, you can't do the integration, right? If because of energy quantization, you do not do the integration, convert into integration, do a discrete sum. And if you have wire, this is a kx direction, you have y and z, again, yz direction. you do not do the integration into the sum. So that's really the mathematical difference between her lecture and what I'm talking here. Okay. Of course, at the end, when you because of this, that's what she emphasized at the end. The for film or wire, the density of states are different, right? And density of states difference will be reflected into how we do this summation. And so I gave you the expression I had is L21, again, say d phi dx plus L22 dt dx. Okay, so those will be, you go through a similar process as we did for electron, yes? Thank you. So this is the per charge, how many charge. And I should have a Vx. The Vx, this is the gradient. The gradient, right? So the flux. So it's the rate of motion in the x direction. One of one. That's all right. Yeah. Okay. So this is the heat flux moving in the x direction, and this is the charge flux moving in the x direction. And we said at the end of last lecture, if I have an open circuit, so I have a material that's subjected to a temperature gradient, but I have an open circuit. There's no real current flow inside, right? And in that case, the charge flux, current flux, is zero. So what I left with, you can say, to satisfy the requirement the current flux is zero, I have to have this term balance this term, because there is a temperature gradient. I'm imposing temperature gradient onto it, right? So what I have then is d phi dx divided by dt dx then equals L11 L12, right? And I define, say, so what this says, the temperature gradient, a temperature difference at 2 points, generate electrochemical potential difference, or really the voltage difference. That's what you would measure when you stick say multimeter to measure the temperature, the voltage in the 2 points. So here I have a sample, and one side is hot, the other side is cold. Okay, so you will measure phi 2 and phi 1. Really, you measure a voltage drop between the 2 points, so you measure a voltmeter. And we define the Seebeck coefficient is minus the electric field divided by the temperature. So it's a negative of the electric field, is a negative of the electrochemical potential, so we have is negative L12 divided by L11. Yes? Yes. This is we're not talking about the electron only.
Right. But I mean, when you say the temperature gradient, you can't actually.
Well, you raise a very good point. The electron Foulon temperature difference. The question is, how large is the electron Foulon temperature difference? And it turns out, in most cases, this temperature difference is very small. In metal, if you read chapter 8, which I'm not going to cover detail, where I discuss electron Foulon temperature, if I have temperature difference, And it turns out that in normal condition, that temperature in metal, it will be 10 to the minus 10 or 10 to the minus 11 degree. But when you go to very small geometry, you may run into long equilibrium between electron and photon, and then this delta T should be the temperature of the electron temperature. It's not the photon temperature. Right. What drives in that case, because in normal material, photon dominates, right? Yeah. So what is established, the delta T is not because of the electron heat conduction, but it's because of photon heat conduction. But because locally, electron photon pretty much close their temperature difference. So whatever temperature difference you measure is, in most cases, is truly also the electron temperature difference. Although what established that difference is not because of electron, it's because of photon. That answer your question? And this also, you can take a look. You can say you make a thermocouple, right? Why you have to make a thermocouple? Because you stick a, you can just use one material to stick into a hot area. And there's a voltage, but you have to put another wire to measure that voltage difference. So you put another wire, then there's a temperature voltage difference between this other wire as well. So you have another voltage, right? So you always have two voltage, and then you make a couple that will facilitate your measurement. And the other point is, when you make a thermocouple, you can put it into the hot point that is somewhere hot, and it could go through the air. The wire goes through the air, right? So the temperature along the wire doesn't have to be linear. It could be, let's say, if we plot the temperature difference, this is hot, it could be this way. I can have a very long wire, and most of the wire is at room temperature, right? And as long as the wire is made of the same material, right? As long as the thermoelectric property of the wire is uniform along the wire, then it doesn't matter, because you can see I can integrate over x, and what I really have is just the v divided by minus v divided by the temperature difference T hot minus T cold. Okay? So it's a different, although say here the definition is differential because dx, dx all within both the potential gradient and temperature gradient. At the end, the actual temperature distribution is not important. It's really the temperature difference of the 2 points. And I was actually visiting this month, in early this month, I visited a lab in Korea. And one of the guys showed me how he developed a thermocouple on a chip. And this is a big, so if you have a thermocouple on a chip, so he has material one and material two. Okay, and the first question I saw this, because I ran into this situation before, is how would you calibrate such a thermocouple? Okay, this let's say if you just put it on glass, how would you calibrate it? And suppose you can make this junction very small, right? You want to measure the temperature of this junction only. And he said that he calibrated this way. He put this one, put the wire. So he can put the same wire. This is, let's say, platinum or gold. And he put the platinum here. He put the gold. A lot of thermocouple wire is aluminum chromium alloy. So depends on the... So the question is, and then he put this into an oven. And he is doing the calibration. So my question is, what is that calibration? What do you think? put in this oven. Where is the temperature he's measuring? Is he measuring the same, this point? It's measuring the average temperature of the plate because, you see, you have Seebeck coefficient here, S1. This is S2. Let's assume even those are the same, right? It's the temperature, the voltage difference times temperature difference. So S1 times this point and the mass this point is zero temperature difference. There's no voltage, right? He can as well just put a third material collect there. Doesn't matter because at the end he's measuring really the whole region between this. So he will have a voltage drop between here and here. He will have a lot of voltage drop between here and here because this is ambient, right? So it's non-trivial. You make it where exactly you're measuring. And of course, say you when you do the actual measurement, maybe this local region temperature is different, but you are not calibrating correctly. So you have to think about the ways to calibrate. That's when you make things on the chip. Of course, if you make a on the wire, say if you just make say two wires, and then you can just heat up, and then you know the temperature exactly this point. That's fine. Okay, so this is a Seebeck effect. Yeah. Yes. Electrochemical potential, it's psi is the same size as mu. It's possible. Let's see. I think this is an electrostatic potential. This is electrostatic potential. Right? And electrochemical potential is a chemical potential divided by Q. So Q is for Peter, do you do this? What's the is this sign correct? Mean I'm checking every electrical engineer. I always get trouble when I go to. I always get trouble. I hate this negative electron charge. I got the big say always. Every time I do this, I go back to check and back and forth many times. Okay, well, let me just say you go there and see the figure out yourself. It's not at all come to lecture to me. Every time I sit there, I check back and forth when this I do a deal with negative charge. So I put a Q. Along the way I've been using Q as a general symbol, and then when I put electron, so do electron, I put a Q equals minus E at the end. So this is a one, and then you look at the JQ, the heat flux carried by the charge. And so when the temperature is uniform, what you have is JQ equals L21 minus d5 dx. Right? So what it says, when there's a voltage, there's current flow in the medium, you also get a heat flux carried by the charge. And you can say when I can replace this d, when dt dx d equals zero, I can replace d phi dx by je, so I have L21 divided by L11 je. Right? So I have the heat flux is proportional to current flux. And that's the Peltier coefficient. So this is a Peltier, if this is a Peltier coefficient. So when the current flow in a uniform temperature conductor associated with the current, because the electrons also carry heat with it, so there is a heat current, heat flux. This is not, say, the conduction heat flux, because there's no temperature gradient, right? And this is and if you reverse this direction of the current, the heat flux also reverse, carried. It's just because of electron motion direction, and those are the heat carried by electrons. And it turns out that the if we look at this two coefficients here, okay, and they are related. Peltier is T times S. Okay, that also means you can say L21 equals TL12, right? And in fact, so if you look at this, this is L12, here L21, right? And in fact, if I write this temperature, here I write this L12 times T, and divide by times dx. So this is a generalized force, temperature gradient. Rather than write a temperature gradient, I write dT dx divided by T. Remember, if you think about the entropy, where is it? When we discuss with the entropy, the temperature is in the denominator, right? So this is really more like an entropy flux. The generalized driving force for heat is 1 over temperature, rather than temperature itself. Okay, so this is generalized force, and this is the coefficients between force. So when I generalize this coefficients, I always have this coefficient, which is here, equals this coefficient. This is an example of the Ansager reciprocity. Relation. So in the take-home exam, you can see I have the mass flux and heat flux. I ask you to derive the relation, right? One, their coefficients. Say one is the mass flux coupled to temperature gradient. The other is the heat flux is coupled to the density gradient, right? So this cross-term coefficients also satisfy the same Ansager reciprocity, except when you have to generalize your force. Okay, so there is always a relationship, and if under the most generalized force term, they are equal to each other. And Ansager was awarded Nobel Prize for this general reciprocity relation. Okay. And so those are the two thermoelectric effects. Seebeck effect, we use it in most often we use it as a thermocouple. And the Peltier effect, it's not reflected. Typically, it's hard to measure, right? It's the heat flow inside one material. That's the most fundamental. But what's reflected in a device is when you put two different materials together. So when you put two different materials together, this is a material one, and this is a material two. And you can say when I pass a current through material one and material two, in material one, the heat carried, JQ1, is pi 1 JE. And in material 2, is JQ2 equals pi 2 JE. And JE, the electrical charge current flux, must be continuous. And now when these two materials are different, pi 1 and pi 2 are different, then you do an energy balance, you can say this is what's going in and what's go out. So at the end, I have to have imbalance. So I supply a Q junction. So Q junction must equal to JQ2 minus JQ1. This is a pi 2 minus pi 1 times JE, right? So that means if I have more, the power coefficient in region 2 is larger than power coefficient in region 1, then you will subtract, say you will have to supply heat to the electrons. What supply heat to the electron is the cooling down of the lattice. You can cool down the lattice. It takes heat in from the ambient, cooling, right? And if you, at the end, if they, there are less go out than comes in, you reject the heat to the ambient. The ambient is the surrounding lattice, right? They were discussing the electrons. So lattice can be cooled or heated, thermoelectric effect. And the third thermoelectric effect is what happens when there is a temperature gradient in the medium. So here, when we discuss the Peltier coefficient, we assume the temperature gradient is zero, and there's no temperature difference. A gradient exists in the medium. And now if there is both a current flow, JE, and also a temperature gradient, dT dx, and turns out even locally. So here, locally, there will be either heat absorption or heat rejection. And this is, again, a reversible. Depends on your current flowing direction. And this will be, so you have to supply dQ dx. That's the heat either supplied or rejected because there is a current flowing and also there is a temperature difference. And this ratio dQ dx, dT dx, and divide by JE is the beta, and that's the Thomson effect. Thomson is the same person, not Kelvin. Okay, you all know the Kelvin, right? And he's a very prolific researcher. During his lifetime, in the old days, right? He was very old. In the old days, he wrote more than 500 papers in his lifetime. And so Kelvin has a lot of, you hear a lot of Kelvin relations, different fields of Kelvin. He works in thermodynamics area. So this is a Thomson effect, and it can be related again to the Seebeck coefficient. Okay. So again, this depends on the current flowing direction. You can see this is the current. You can reject the heat or absorb heat. And you can go to prove it by thinking about what's the heat generation per unit volume due to one is the current flux. So this is the due to the heat flux carried, and also the second is due to the electrochemical flux. So the electrochemical gradient. So by adding these two together, at the end, you find out you have three terms in the local heat. One is the jar heating term. So that's the sigma JE square. That's the jar heating term. The second term will be a heat conduction term. So it's the thermal conductivity of electron ddx. And the third term will be the Thomson term, Thomson heat term. So you can actually go just to prove, I have it in the book, all the derivations, so you can go to read it yourself. And the third comment I want to make is the thermal conductivity, right? So if we look at here, the derivation, if we look at the derivation for the heat flux, this term seems to be thermal conductivity term. Right? Heat flux is a proportional to temperature gradient. But also from your take-home exam, you see that we really should not just say this is the thermal conductivity. Because if I have a conductor subjected to the temperature difference and I have an open circuit, then I have to satisfy this relation, there's no charge flow, right? When there's no charge flow, there's a potential gradient, electrostatic potential gradient, so this is not zero. So I have to eliminate d phi dx from the requirements that J equals zero. From this, I can derive the thermal conductivity of electrons is really L1, L11, L12, L21 minus L22. So that's the thermal conductivity. It's not just L22 is itself is thermal conductivity. Right? So now there are a few. I discussed the Onsager relation. And the Onsager relation is very general. And in fact, all those coefficients have relationship. Onsager is for the cross term of this force, generalized force and cross term. And even between the, this one is the electric conductivity, right? The current is proportional to electric conductivity, electrochemical potential gradient. And the thermal conductivity, between thermal conductivity, electric conductivity, their relationship. And all this is because if you go back to think about how we derive these expressions, in this expression, they really, we have relaxation time, we have velocity. So the difference between charge flux and the heat flux is whether we multiply this by either E minus mu or by substitute this into just the charge carried by each carrier, right? So those are the difference. But this is, at the end, the E is integrated over all the allowable value. So it's like a dummy integral. So at the end, there are relationship, and one of those important relationship is KE divided by sigma T. Okay, the electron thermal conductivity divided by the electric conductivity is related to is actually in metal is a constant. Okay, so this one constant is 2.45 × 10⁻⁸. So watt. I forgot the units. This is the Winman-Franz law. I didn't write it down. So let's say this is what's the unit watt meter Kelvin, and the electric conductivity is the inverse ohm inverse meter. So what I have at the end, inverse ohm inverse meter. Kelvin, right? What? Ohm? I thought I have a Kelvin tensor. Okay. Electric conductivity. Is this electric conductivity unit? Or meter is on the top. Huh? Okay. Resistance, I was go back to resistance L divided by A. So electric conductivity unit is ohm meter. I'm right. Huh? Okay. So this one is Widman-Franz law. And that relate the electrical conductivity to the thermal conductivity. And L is the Lorentz number. And turns out that for semiconductor, this will change a little bit. Okay, but that number of change, I checked, I think it's within factor of 2. So there is really not much change in the Lorentz number even when you go to semiconductors. And so given this relationship, you can prove it from all this coefficient expressions, okay? But given this relationship, now if you see you want to find out how much is the in a semiconductor or in a metal, how much is the electron thermal conductivity contribution, how much is the photon thermal conductivity, what you measure is the total thermal conductivity, but you can go to estimate what's the electron thermal conductivity from Wiedemann-Fresnel and subtract that out to find out what's the photon thermal conductivity. Okay, and that's all I want to discuss for the electron transport. And now I want to come back to think about, in this section, in this chapter so far, we derived the Fourier law for photon, we derived Newton shear stress law, we derived the electron transport. You can see think this as almost null, and the coupled electron and the heat transport. And all those are diffusion theory. The question I want to ask Lex is, when is the diffusion theory valid? What are the conditions? So if you think about how we derive those laws, we started from the Boltzmann equation, and this Boltzmann equation, let's say, is the VR, V times the gradient of F, and with respect to R, and the F divided by M, the gradient with respect to the velocity, and we derive this under the relaxation time approximation, so this is F minus F0 divided by tau, right? And when we derive the diffusion equation, we did F minus F0 equals G. We assume this is small, the deviation from F0 is small. So we substitute into the expression, we have dF0 dt plus dG dt and plus V R F0 plus V R G and the F M V F0. If I write it because I need to use this for both discussion here and our next step. So this is a tau divided by G. So this is there's no approximation, but when we derive the diffusion equation, we neglect this time derivative. We assume that this one is small. We assume this one is small. That's what the approximation we made. And under this assumption, we drop those terms. What we get is G, which is, again, F minus F0 equals tau. And V dot F, V R F0 minus tau F M V F0. Right, so this is what we used in deriving all the laws. We use this expression for the Fourier law, for Newton shear stress law, and for the Ohm's law. And in this process, we dropped all those terms. So if you think about when we discuss the diffusion, we always say Noether equilibrium, right? Noether equilibrium, because we know that once there's transport, if everything is at absolute equilibrium, you cannot have any transport. There's no net heat flux, no net mass flux. Right? Equilibrium system everywhere, temperature, chemical potential, pressure are the same. So when we deal with transport, we see local equilibrium. This is probably a word you heard even in undergraduate course. What does local equilibrium mean? Is it really equilibrium? And this one, let's write it as F minus equals F zero minus these two terms. So the Asher distribution is F zero plus these two terms, a small deviation from F zero. Right? So if we plot the F as a function of angle, so this is F zero is symmetric. F0 does not depend on direction. And then F, you can say, is a distortion. If I have transport along the x direction, this will be my, I do a dashed line. This is the actual F. It's a small deviation from F0. This is a, F0 is a circle, F is the deviation from that, say, the Asher distribution. And what we're assuming when we do diffusion theory is F minus F0, these two terms are small. So that means those are the deviations. So this is the surplus. On this side is the deficiency. And those deviations are small. So there is really, even when we mean local equilibrium, it's not truly an equilibrium. It's just a deviation from that equilibrium, small. Right? And secondly, what are those conditions? What conditions I have, I can assume the local equilibrium. Assume the local, there is a local equilibrium. And those conditions are when those terms are much smaller than the rest of the terms in the equation I maintained, I kept, right? So what are those conditions? The first one is F minus F0. This is the small deviation, right? And this must be much smaller than F0 itself, right? Only under that condition is a small deviation, okay? So what does this mean? F minus F0, so F minus F0, that's the order of magnitude. Let me just take this spatial order. So that means tau v, I'm doing the very rough order of magnitude, okay? So don't think this is a rigorous treatment. So this must be satisfied. Right? What this mean? What is this term? So if I do 1D, so tau times V is what? Gives me of the order mean free path. Right? Relaxation time times velocity of the order mean free path. Okay? And this is dF0 dx. Dx, dF0 dt, I use the chain rule, dt dx. Now I'm thinking about the heat conduction. You can extend to electrical or mass diffusion or shear stress velocity. So this is the gradient of this F0. This must be much smaller than F0. Mean free path, dt dx. So here, what I effectively get, I put the f df0 dt divided by f as one of the order 1 over t, and mean free path dt dx must be much smaller than 1. Again, all this is not a rigorous treatment. Okay, order magnitude. So what this means is the mean free path divided by the length of the structure you're dealing with or the domain you're dealing with, because dt dx, right? Let's say the length of the wall, the length of the pipe you're dealing with, the rod you're dealing with, right? So the mean free path is much smaller than that. Okay, that's a quite apparent requirement. So for the diffusion theory to be valid, I need to have the mean free path much smaller than 1. And that also means that the temperature gradient cannot change too rapidly, right? dT dx, if the temperature gradient changes very rapidly over 1 mean free path, this condition cannot satisfy. Right? So this might be the situation, for example, when you use a laser, rapid laser heating of a surface. You have light comes in, and you generate that temperature gradient near the surface. And that gradient may be very rapid varying at the beginning of your heating. And in this case, you don't have a boundary. The boundary is here, L, but during short period, dt dx locally will not satisfy this relationship. Right? So you have to have small temperature variation within 1 mean free path, and mean free path must be larger than the geometry you're dealing with, the domain you're dealing with. And you can look at the second term. So this is the first requirement, F minus F0 much smaller than F0. And the second term is this term must be much smaller than this term, right? The gradient of the deviation must be much smaller than the gradient of F0. So what does that give us? So the gradient of 0 must be much smaller than the gradient of the deviation. Okay. It seems that if I can satisfy this one, the other way. If I can satisfy this one will be approximately satisfied. So this does not give us too much new things. The other term is this time derivative, right? The time derivative must be much smaller than the G term. So what I have is dF dt must be much smaller than G divided by tau. Right? And what this also tells me is approximately T must be a lot much larger than tau. The process that we're dealing with cannot be too short compared to relaxation time. So a lot of this relaxation time for electrons, for photons, is of the order of 10 to the minus 12 picosecond. That's what they say, about 1 picosecond. And if you deal with the heating process of that order, then you can use the diffusion theory. So those are some of the conditions for the diffusion theory to be valid. And if you look at the heat transfer literature, if you do heat transfer, and very often there are probably hundreds of papers written on the so-called hyperbolic heat conduction equation. And unfortunately, I think that's not correct. And it's very... okay, what is a hyperbolic heat conduction equation? And hyperbolic heat conduction equation is is solving one dilemma in heat transfer. So in the Fourier heat conduction, what we have is d dx squared k equals rho c dt dt. So this is the Fourier law. The energy conservation from Q equals mod K dt dx. This is the energy conservation equation. This is the Fourier law. And if you go to solve the this parabolic heat conduction equation, this is a semi-infinite medium. Okay, you go to solve, you suddenly have the surface exposed to a heat source, for example. And you'll find out that your temperature, I'm not going to be exact, but what you'll find out is this is more like x divided by alpha t. Square root of alpha t is the thermal diffusion length. Okay, length divided by alpha t. This is the time. I think I'm right. But generally, what I mean is this is an exponential decay function, right? So what it means is when you, the zero moment, zero time, when you turn on the heat, infinite away, this is not an absolute zero, right? It's an exponential. It's a going, when you go to exponential minus infinite, it's not an absolute zero. Yes? This is alpha for the thermal diffusivity. So you can think this is as AT, yeah, thermal diffusivity. Right? So that's a dilemma, because that means the heat will propagate faster than speed of light. Because when surface is heated, immediately infinite way, there is an infinitely small but not absolute zero response. So that's a dilemma with diffusion equation. So the proposed solution, this is a so-called Cantillon equation. Cantillon equation was to modify the Fourier law so that this is a tau dq dt plus q equals minus k dt dx. So given an extra term here. Given that extra term, you'll find out that the equation becomes the so-called substitute into energy. You'll get a hyperbolic heat conduction equation. This is a parabolic. And you will get a hyperbolic. So you get a two term. You get an extra second order time derivative term. And that solution will more like a shock wave. The heat will propagate as a wave. So on this side of the wave, there's no temperature response. So that solves this problem of infinite heat propagation speed, right? But the problem with this one is still assuming there's a local, so it's time-wise is not a local equilibrium, but space-wise it's a local equilibrium. And the way I say that you will never be realizing experiment, because when you heat it fast, you also have very steep temperature variation. When you have very steep temperature variation, you can't use the diffusion theory. You cannot have this K dT dx term. Okay, so most of the hundreds of papers written, I think, I think it's useless because you will never realize this. If you go to check a hyperbolic heat conduction equation or Cantillon equation, there are many papers written. And there are some people citing the so-called second sound effect. Second sound as a proof for hyperbolic heat conduction equation. But second sound is a different physics. It's very well established in low temperature physics. And that's because once you go to low temperature, okay, we talk about three Fourier scattering, right? So you have a Umlaut scattering where the momentum change because of the reciprocal lattice vector. You have the Lohmer scattering process. So in the very low temperature, the Umlaut scattering, that's the complete change in the momentum of the carrier, is much weaker than the Lohmer process. So in that case, what you have, the Fourier is really can flow as the gas molecules. They just, their scattering is momentum conserving. So you have two Fulong scatter and into a third Fulong, but they conserve momentum. They're still going forward. So in that case, you more have a convection case. And that's the second sound there is like a compressible gas dynamics case. Okay, so there are well-established theory for this second sound propagation at low temperature. And people are citing this as a proof the validity for hyperbolic heat conduction equation is just not coming to the physics. Peter?
Why is it hard to measure that? You just have a long rod, and you abruptly
apply
the temperature
to
one side, and you measure the temperature
on
the other side,
and you measure the temperature. Yes. We're actually setting up this experiment in lab. The problem is, You have some complication. How you heat it up? Because you heat up the electron Fulong, most of the laser you heat up is by electron Fulong excitation. So you got a lot of relaxation. You get a lot of equilibrium electrons. So you first get your hot electron and then relax to Fulong. It turns out that very often is the dominant signal you get. So there are people doing the heating of metal. And they will have femtosecond, in electrical engineering, Professor Ipan and Fujimoto, they did a lot of experiments in the 80s. And they have metal heating, femtosecond pulse heating. And in that case, the signal turns out to be electron rapidly rising to thousands of degrees, and then Fulong is slow propagating. And what we are thinking is how we design experiment to play two different time constants. One's the electron, the other is the phonon. Yeah. Why we have to do this? We don't have to do small size regime, but you have to do fast time regime, right? Because you have to have your time scale of the order of the relaxation time. And the electron, the Fulong relaxation time, again, is of the order of pico. But I think it's really probably around the hundredth picosecond. So we have a time window we can do that experiment. And so that's one comment. And the other comment is on the so what I have derived so far is really the constitutive equation, which relates the flux to the gradient, to temperature gradient, to velocity gradient, or to electrochemical potential gradient. So those are the constitutive relations. And the other way to derive those equations is not go through the constitutive equation, but start from Boltzmann equation and go directly to conservation equations. So the mass conservation, momentum conservation, and the energy conservation equations. And this is by, again, if you think about the Boltzmann equation, and in that case, you don't even have to go to the relaxation time approximation. This is just your scattering term. And you multiply both sides of the Boltzmann equation by the quantity you're interested, the microscopic quantity. This microscopic quantity, for example, when you want to derive the momentum equation, you set this x equals mv. This is the momentum of each individual particle in your system. And then you integrate over all possible velocity or phase space, not just velocity components or wave vector components. Because the average quantity, average momentum is just some individual molecular momentum times the distribution function integrated over all the velocity divided by the normalization, right? So that's the average momentum or average energy or average mass. Okay. So from here, if you set that your x equals mv or just the mass or the energy of a particle, so your energy particle including internal energy plus the kinetic energy term. And then you put this in and do the multiply both sides of Boltzmann equation and do this integration over all volume. Because from here we mentioned before, it's really this F that depends on space. Here is a microscopic quantity that doesn't depend on space. So F depends on space. And then you will derive, you can show, you can derive all the conservation, mass, momentum, and energy conservation equation. I'm not going to go through all the math here, but just mention. And you can derive a Navier-Stokes equation. And an electrical engineer, actually, this is in the 80s, they did a lot of similar treatment to the Navier-Stokes type of equation for electrons. Okay, but it turns out that, again, say we know that Navier-Stokes equation is not valid for nanostructure, right? Because again, when we use the Navier-Stokes equation, we use the Newton shear stress law, and Newton shear stress law is not valid for nano. So although electrical engineer did a lot of this hydrodynamic, electro-hydrodynamic equation in the 80s, I don't think they do it now, because it's just not valid for when you do, for example, MOSFET, because the mean free paths of electrons will be making the drift diffusion equation not valid. And there's also a similar Foulon hydrodynamic equation. And that Foulon hydrodynamic equation is the basis where you can derive the second sound. That's the, you see, propagation of a thermal wave in the low temperature range. So that's all because the average velocity of molecules, Navier-Stokes equation, the average velocity of molecules. Electrohydrodynamic equation, the average speed of velocity of electrons. And Foulon hydrodynamics is the average velocity of Foulons. They are not zero. Okay? So you can derive those hydrodynamic type of equations. And I'm not going through all the derivation. You can read the last section of chapter six. So, what I'm going to do next is coming back to look at this Boltzmann equation and say, well, the diffusion theory is all based on neglecting this higher order term, and now, and we know the condition is that the mean free path is much smaller than chiral length. Now I'm going to relax this. I'm going to deal with size effects. But this size effect I'm dealing is a classical size effect. I'm not dealing quantum size effects. To deal with quantum size effect, as I was mentioning at the beginning of this lecture, for example, when we do the current flux or energy flux, we did a three summation, right? Kx, Ky, Kz. And to do quantum is really, this, when I do the summation, I have to be careful when I convert it into the integration, because the energy separation may not make the summation conversion into integration a valid approach there. So that's the way you deal with the quantum regime. And what I'm going to do is to deal with just a classical size effects. So we're going to solve the Boltzmann equation. We're still assuming that the bulk dispersion relation is valid. And we're just looking at when the particle hits the boundary, they won't be bounced, and how that will affect the transport properties. So this will be chapter 7 on classical size effects. You will ask. You should ask me many questions, actually, because there's a region. Really, I say it's classical, but from the discussion, you'll see how I really treat the interface roughness, because there is a regime that seems to be, I think there are lots of work to be done. People haven't done much work. So I'm going to deal with finite thickness. First example, I'm going to deal with the finite thickness of a film. So I have either electric conduction or heat conduction, but this will be along the x direction, along the film direction. Now the film thickness could be much smaller or comparable or larger than the mean free path. Right? So I can look at the carrier transport. Also, the heat flux is along the x direction. The left heat flux is along the x direction. Now, microscopically, the molecules or electrons or photons, they can go all directions. Right? So they have the chance of going oblique direction, and once they go, if the thickness is smaller than mean free path, that means they will not scatter with other electron photon, and they will hit the wall. Upon hitting the wall, they will be reflected. And that reflection, in theory, goes to chapter 5. Remember, chapter 5, we discuss how the interface reflect or transmit, right? And there are different possibilities. One is a specular, the other is diffuse. And in reality, it could be somewhere in between specular and diffuse. Specular just means the angle of incidence, equal the angle of reflection. And this is the case for photon, and I give the take-home exam for the case of electron. And for acoustical wave, you may get the reflection, and we said because there are transverse longitudinal, there are possibility of mode conversion. But you can calculate all that according to the generalized Snell law and the generalized Fresnel coefficients. So this is a specular case. And the other case, as an approximation, is once it comes in, it has the chance of going all directions isotropically, right? So if you roughen a surface, make a surface rough, the reflection will be diffuse. It goes all directions. And if you see every direction, same probability, that will be the definition for diffuse surface. So we have diffuse. Two situations, specular and diffuse. And now I want to look at the start from the Boltzmann equation. So again, I do steady state. So these two terms will drop out. And I will also drop this term. This is a drop in this term. I'm assuming that it's the space, mainly the space effect. The space, boundary restriction is reflected in many in changing the spatial distribution. It's not in the momentum distribution of the carriers. Okay? And this, I have to say myself, is not completely comfortable. Yes?
So the scattering time on this side could depend upon momentum and energy.
Well, when you see that, you have to go back to do the quantum scattering. So what you're saying is you are changing the, if you do quantum mechanical, say quantum size effects, you can recalculate the energy spectrum, you can redo the selection rules, and you can change that relaxation time. The problem with that is once you do that, you come back again and say there's a rough surface there. Then you are sort of double counting. Because when you first do calculation, you say it's ideal surface. You do a second calculation, you say there's a rough surface. And here, again, say that's the question I want to say. I said somebody should ask questions, right? Here I'm assuming there's no energy dispersion change, no quantum size effect, but surface is rough. Just a changing trajectory. So which one is the most more appropriate? I don't know. Okay. My preference is at least for full lung treatment. Most of the time, I found that classical treatment is just explain most of the phenomena. And the quantum treatment, ideal treatment, does not explain the phenomena. That's there could be energy change, exchange. But it's what it's saying is whether it's elastic or inelastic. And most of this treatment is the elastic. Just to say, yes, it's changing meaning in the direction. It doesn't change the frequency. Okay, so with that, now what I have is, look at that Boltzmann equation. What I have is V dot RF0 plus V dot RG and plus FM dot V F0 equals mass F0 divided by tau. And this G is F minus F0, or let me just keep it as a G. So this is the equation I want to solve. But now, since my transport is along the x direction, so here is, you can say this is will be dF0 dx, and this is a Vx. That's the cross product, dF0 dx, right? And plus F M and dot V F0. And so I move this term to the left-hand side of the equation. So what I have is a minus Vx dF dg d what I have Vx dg dx minus Vy dg dy and minus Vz dg dz and minus g divided by tau. So I move this term to the left-hand side, and I written it out explicitly. Okay, three terms, the cross product. And now, let say this is my x direction, this is my y direction, and g is the deviation from equilibrium. In the case of diffusion theory, I just drop this term. Right? I dropped this term in the diffusion theory. You can see this term I dropped. But now I have the condition, the mean free path divided by d is not much less than 1. So the y direction is constrained. So because of y direction constraint, I have to maintain this term. If I deal with a thin film, the z direction is not constrained. So the deviation from equilibrium in the z direction is small. I can drop this term. And in the x direction, if I assume that the film length is very long, I can just drop this term. I maintain mainly the cause for that change from equilibrium is due to the constraint in the y direction, the film thickness direction. If you deal with wires, you have to do the z direction, okay? Or you do spherical coordinate, cylindrical coordinate if you do circular wires, okay? So I want to solve this equation, and so let me just rewrite it. I put the negative sign to the left, to the left, and I put a tau also to the left. So I rewrite it as vy dg dy and tau plus g equals minus tau and vx df0 dx minus tau f, let me just write the fx, and divide by m, and df dvx. So let's say this is the transport in the x direction only. And so this is my equation, and you can this is f0. So if f0 is none, the right-hand side is none. Yes? Which one? DG. Oh. Oh. This one? Again, I'm assuming that the natural surface only changes the spatial distribution, and it does not change the velocity distribution. So what it means is it scales same for each of those energy or velocity component. This lateral surface is doing the same thing. It's generally, it's a spatial modification rather than modifying the energy space, modifying the wave vector space. Like I said, I'm not, say, completely satisfied with this approximation myself. But the question is how big effect it will have for the transport. That would be actually a very good question. I don't have a good answer to you. Okay? So from this, what I'll do next in the next lecture is to solve this equation for the same solution is identical applied to electrical conductivity to thermal conductivity. And it's that actually the people first solve the problem for electric conductivity. And thermal conductivity, just a simple extension. You follow identical procedure, you get the same results. Okay, I'll stop here. If you have not picked up your midterm, you should come to me.